We will be taking you through our trip. First, we're going to start by a quick overview about the trip. Where did we go and how did we spend the 2 weeks? And then we will be telling you about the main things that God has done with us there. And then we're going to tell you what are we going to do next. What is the strategy for Namibia? How are we seeing Namibia in the next 2 years? So to start with, okay, so this statement is the secret for Namibia. Okay, it was not us but God. That is what we experienced in Namibia. We had very little to give. We knew nothing about the people there. It was an exploration trip. Nobody went to Namibia before us. So we had so little to give. But what we experienced is that when we have so little, God does the rest. And this is the verse that we would like to share with you. My grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Okay, so the very first thing that God decided to do with us, He decided to take us all through the very beginning of the trip. Can you see that? Have any guesses? Okay, we were 8 people. We had 16 bags. The first 8 bags should have been like 23 kilos each. Each of them were from 30 to 35 kilos. We had 8 carry-ons. They should have been 7 to 8 kilos. Each of them were from 15 to 20 kilos. And guess what? They were all shipped on the plane. So God decided to give us a relaxed trip without any, without being full of things to carry on with us. And it's coming. Okay, and we arrived very safe to Namibia with our 16 bags. Okay, now Sharif will take you with the rest of the trip. He's going to give you an overview about how did we spend our days there.
I'll take you very quickly through Google Earth to see where we went in Namibia. Where is Namibia in Africa? The first thing is Windhoek, the capital of Namibia, where we have our main church there. The place is lovely there. It's a big church with a big garden around it. And then we moved to serve 2 adjacent areas where we have informal settlements, one named Okahanja Park. It's on the hill where you can have the view of all Windhoek over there, and we will show you photos later on. And there is Otshumisi, another slum area. And as you can see here, the glare is very high because these are all zinc roofs. This is the reflection of the sun on the ceiling of those houses. It is very poor, but they are still very clean, in a very wonderful order. After that, we traveled to the north, and on our way, after around 400 kilometers driving, we went to a place called Tsomeb. It's a country there. And we went to the SOS. The SOS is a Canadian institute that has orphans. They have 24 youth, and around 104 kids. And we went there to serve the youth. All right? Abuna just told us they are very well educated. They live in a good standard, all right? And they have lots of questions. Why God? Why pain? Why do we need God? Who is God? Is there God? Can we see Jesus? Everybody is asking in Namibia, can we see Jesus? Is Jesus just in Egypt? So can we come to Egypt to see Jesus? Or can we see Jesus with you? And that was the main topic everywhere we go, especially with the youth. This is the house of the youth. The boys, the girls, that's the meeting area here, and that's the kiosk you'll see later on where we sat with the kids. And then we went further to the north, on Dangwa City, another 400 kilometers, right? A church that you can see fair enough, it's in a more less civilized area, right? Where most of the black people are, right? It's a very nice church. with a school and a center around it where they have a computer center and a place where the priest sleeps over. Further on, we went to the Himba. The Himba is an ethnic group that lives in the desert or in the forest or whatever it is there. It's just when, if you find it on Google Earth, you'll find it just, it's all the area, and they live in small villages, and they are very uncivilized people. Or because they just have no ID cards, they don't go to schools, they have nothing civilized, they are disattached from the civilizations, totally. I'll take you quickly through the 13 days we had there. We will move very quickly, and then we will take you for the highlights of the trip, what really touched us very much. All right? On the first day, we arrived through South Africa, and then the Egyptians there, the community there, they just came to welcome us in the church. They're very pleasant people. All right? And then we got to meet some of the local servants there that the father there, the priest there, just takes care of, and they like to come to church because of him very much. And we had that night a prayer all together, which was the first ice breaking between the Egyptians and the Namibian people. On the second day, we had to do something that was very interesting, to do the holy bread. We never get to do it here in Egypt. Right? So we woke up early, and we found the boy working there in church, woke up earlier, and he finished almost everything. So we just, all the boys went there, took a photograph beside the holy bread being done as if we did it ourselves. Okay, this is the church there. It's quite a big church. It's very well monitored. It's painted. It's very clean. And it can accommodate lots of people. It's the only Orthodox church in Namibia, which gets every Orthodox in Namibia to have their mass there. Even the Russians, they come. The bishop of the Russians come and do the feast there after our feast for a week. After that, a week ahead, he comes from South Africa to do the big gathering for all the Russians there. Some Ethiopians go to church. There are Russian icons inside. Abuna has a corner for the Russians and for the Ethiopians to have their saints inside. In the afternoon, we started this mission, by the way, is the first one to Namibia. It's meant to be a discovery mission. We had to go through all the services Abuna is doing, so we can get to know how can we help there and how can we serve there. All right? So it is just by surfing everywhere, we are just getting the view of the service there. So the first thing we went to is Otshimisi. As you can see, this is a tent where we put our tent there to gather people there from the zinc homes. They just move on. It was lovely feeling that everybody were on a bit of a high hill, and everybody was coming from the informal settlement towards that tent. Okay? Here you can find several photos of, we had like Sunday school for the kids, the youth, and the adults. On the third day, on Sunday, there is the mass and the congregation comes, all the Orthodox people. And then we had Sunday school for the congregation, and we had some lessons for the kids. And in the afternoon, we went to the other place that is called Okahanja Park. It's also on the hill, and it's less civilized than the one we went the day before. Right? You can find kids that have that are very unhealthy, where they have malnutrition and their stomachs are just full like that. And we have here several meetings with them, and we had Abuna pass by each team and pray at the end of the session with them. And we had the local servants together with us, sharing the lead, how to order people, help us with all the things we do with the handcrafts and so on. Yes. Day 4, we had those people coming back to our church to have the mass, the Sunday school, and we had the servants preparation course in parallel each day. Day 5, while going to the north, we went to the SOS, the orphanage people, and we had a meeting with them. That was a very interesting meeting because it was the first time to meet youth that are well educated, and we had a wonderful discussion with them, and they asked us to get back to them and serve the kids. This is the church of the north. it's, as you can see, it's all in sand. The ground is sand. The church is quite big on the left, and on the right is the school and the nursery. The Himba people, the people that live in the inside the forest there, they live in a village with a fence, a very low fence. They believe about the holy fire, and they can reach their ancestors, and their ancestors reach their gods, and they are not very well focused and knowing God, and how can they reach God. The day after, we went back to the church in the north, and we had a sports day for the school we have there. We have around, I think, 60 kids or something. And then we visited one of the informal settlements beside the church, and we served there too. On the Saturday, they had a Bible study where Francis, the deacon there in the church, a local servant, does the Bible study for everybody. And then we had a big banner that says that we have a football tournament in church on Saturday afternoon. So everybody almost came to that tournament. They played, and the first prize was to be distributed the second day after Mass. So everybody came to the Mass, to attend the Mass, so they can take the gift after the Mass on the second day. At the same night, Abuna called us and is asking us, what on earth were you telling the people there? So we were just a little bit unexpecting that call from Abuna, and hesitant, what did he mean? And accordingly, we understood from him that one of the girls that were attending the servant's preparation course called Abuna and asked to be baptized on the second day. So that was very nice, and very, God was bidallana, okay? Spoiling us, thank you. All right? On our way back, we went to the SOS and we served the kids and the youth again. And then we had the chance for two more days, we wanted to visit the west, the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean. So we went to a place called Suakupun. And that's the place on the beach there, where we had breakfast on the other day. And then at the last night, we had the other Egyptians coming to just a small farewell. That's the brief about the tour. We can go in details in each service, but we won't do that. We will just hit on several stories that really touched the group.
So I would like to share with you one of the highlights, one of the very experiences that touched us most when we were in Namibia. We went to the orphans of the SOS. These are like 400 kilometers away from the capital where we were at first. When we arrived there, or the day when we were leaving Windhoek, we realized that the gift we were meant to give to these youth, these huge bags that we had carried, we had sent by mistake to the north where the other church is. So we had to go to the SOS and we had no gifts to give them. It's because we are lousy in our preparation. We did this mistake, so we just gathered any leftovers for gifts from Sunday school that we had, and we just hoped that somehow not many youth will be upset. When we arrived there, the service went much better than expected. God was seriously with us, and the discussions went very smoothly, and without us having synchronized every single detail in our discussions, it turned out that any question that was asked, somehow one of us managed to answer it in a creative way, and they were very engaged. And then there came the time where we had to give away the gifts before we left. So we counted them. There were 24. And then we looked at our bag. There were exactly 24 gifts that we had. So we thought, okay, fine, that's great. Maybe it's coincidence, but then something else happened. Towards the end of our discussion, somehow we got to talk about salvation, which wasn't the topic that we were meant to talk about. But somehow, during the discussion, that's where the discussion led us to. And then Sherry remembered that in the morning when we were leaving Windhoek,
She thought, I'll take some brochures. I know we might not need them, but I'll take them anyway. These brochures on salvation. She found them, and she thought, I'll take them anyway. So when the discussion got us to talk about salvation, she quickly remembered that she needs to go to the car to get these brochures. So Mina, thankfully, went there, got the brochures, and then they wanted to count them, and they thought, okay, let's draw the cross before we count them to make sure that each and everyone will take one. So they did, and then they counted. There were only 23. So they were like, no, God definitely wouldn't leave one without one brochure. So Sherry looked in another bag of hers, and that was the 24th one. So then we were sure that definitely not us. We were very, very lousy in our preparation, but God wouldn't leave someone, one of the kids, without this brochure or a gift. Thanks.
The second thing that really touched us there, and the verse says, to everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. When we went to Okahanja Park, the kids were very delighted with whatever what was done there, and we were very happy more than they were, very much. And then Sherry, thankfully, my lovely wife, she asked the people, would you like to come to church? That was a Sunday. Abuna was doing a mass each and every day since we arrived. Friday, Saturday and Sunday. Monday was his day off. So she asked them, would you like to come? And they all said yes. And Sherry went to Abuna very happy. Abuna, they all want to come. So Abuna was, oh, that's very nice. So you have to, Sherry, you have to prepare breakfast and find somebody to do the mass. He was joking, of course. So he came to me, your wife is doing me some troubles. She's getting everybody to church. And that night, Tati Himmet, which is Sir Himmet in Namibian, went and bought us breakfast for the next day, and we prepared everything. And these are the people we served there. And then we started the mass, but no one showed up. That's it. But all of a sudden, after the mass was over, the bell rang, a microbus came in, and that was the image we had. Abuna went out, after, of course, giving us some lovely words about, see, you just told me you want a mass. I did a mass. We had it in Arabic because we had nobody attending the mass except us. And then, after he finished, he got to me and told me, you and your wife are lovely people, but nobody came. So, that was it. When the microbus came, he turned around. He was looking for Sherry everywhere to get her blessings and tell her. And it was a really funny thing. We were all impressed that the people came just after Mass. They are not Christians. They weren't going to attend the Mass. And we would have had to leave the Mass to sit with them. All right? Because there it is not easy to keep people for a long period of time. So we felt how God wanted us to finish the Mass all together. And as soon as we finished the Mass, they all arrived at the same time. So it was really not us, but God that got the people there. We had a lovely Sunday school with the kids and the youth. They had lovely discussions. And look at that creative kid that took all the pencils we had, the colored pencils, and did a big tower with that.
Okay, that's me again. Another story that touched us very much was when we went to the Himba. Himba, this is a tribe. It's a very distinct tribe for Namibia. They're very traditional. Can I have a picture of the Himba? They're very traditional. As you can see, they don't wear like us. They cover all their body with mud and it's like sunscreen for them. They don't believe in Jesus. They have a lot of respect to the fire. And they believe in Mukuru. Mukuru is an almighty that they can call through their ancestors. They put the fire. The fire enables them to call their ancestors. And their ancestors are the only ones who can communicate directly with Mukuru, which is the almighty. So we were sitting the day before we went trying to brainstorm what are we going to tell these people who believe in Mukuru. The discussion wasn't smooth. We had all possible ideas, and we had difficulties in agreeing with each other on what we shall tell them and how we can talk to them, not to mention that we don't have a common language. They speak their own language, and they have their complete different belief system. So finally, we were sitting there for many hours, having troubles agreeing, and finally, we agreed on something that we're gonna talk, that we're gonna do a little play about salvation. And we prayed, and after we prayed, we went to bed, and in the morning we went to Himba. We drove for 100 kilometers and arrived there. And to our greatest surprise, when we arrived, they were really friendly with us. We didn't have a mean of communication, but the girls were sitting with the girls. Somehow we managed to find some way of communicating. They were very pleasant. They were smiling. And there was this human connection between us and them. And eventually, we did our little play, and Abuna did the devotion afterwards. As said, our initial idea was that we give them a slight idea about Jesus, about salvation. Happily, someone before us had already come and gave them a little idea about Jesus, so we weren't talking from scratch. Abuna was talking to them, giving the devotion with the help of an interpreter. And after a bit, we found Abuna talking about baptism, asking them if they would like to get baptized. And they're saying, yes, everyone, yes, we would like to get baptized. Yes, we would like to be with Jesus. And it was very overwhelming, because that wasn't our plan. We had planned for much little than that. We didn't speak weird words, or we didn't speak complicated words, but they understood it. And before we left, their headman told us that they have a piece of land that they would like to attribute for prayer, for eventually this place to be a place, a house of God. We went there in this place. We all prayed together. And we sang in Lam Tabni Anta Al-Bawd, Al-Bayt. And so hopefully one day there'll be a church here. Thanks.
Okay, very quickly, we decided to relax at the end, okay? So after our very long trip, I think we traveled about 300 kilometers. 3,000 kilometers. So at the end, we decided to relax in a place called Swakumund. This is a place like Sharm el-Sheikh, okay? So Abuna decided to take us to have a good coffee and breakfast by the ocean. And when we went there, Abuna had some verses in his pocket. So he got out these verses and he decided to go inside the coffee shop and distribute them to the waitresses. So they were very happy and they took them all, and each and every one was very happy with the verse they got. And then he went to the owner of the coffee shop, and she was a white Namibian. And then she was like, no, thank you, I don't believe, I don't want. So Abuna was very disappointed and he wanted to leave the place. But we said, okay, we're just going to have breakfast and then we're going to leave right away. So he called me, Mira, please go and get your guitar. And then I was like, Abuna, the lady did not like the verse, so probably if we start singing here in the coffee shop, we're going to be sent out. So he told me, okay, please go and get it and don't mind about this. And I got my guitar and we started singing. All the waitresses, luckily the white Namibian left, the lady left, and all the waitresses came out. They were surrounding us. We had some papers with some songs written on them, and they started singing with us. We were very happy because even on the day that we decided to relax, Jesus said, no, this trip is for me. This trip is to serve me. So that is what we've done there. And to tell you something, these girls loved singing to God. And what we realized there is that they don't go to church because churches there are only on Sundays. And in this place, they need to work on Sundays. So God didn't just want us to relax there, but he wanted to send us there to be with these girls. Okay.
I know we're late. I'm very sorry, Tante Ines. Just 2 more minutes, all right? We're going to tell you a little bit about the servant preparation course. We worked with them very much. We enjoyed their presence, the local servants. They're wonderful people. All right. That's the course. We had some people attending, around 8 people. At that day, they had 2 that had some excuses. They couldn't attend. And I will show you quickly a brief where we started. And I'll focus on one person, Tangeni. All right. Here, he was helping us, just helping us. He's very helpful. Everybody's very helpful. On the other day, still helping us, but not taking the lead and still taking the course. When we went to the Himba, he took the role of the king because we wanted to show them the king in black, where the salvation can come through the black God. God doesn't differ for the color. So he was playing the role model of the king and he acted very well with them. On the other day, where with the children, he was very active and doing nice things with them. After that, we started trying him to take the role player. So here he said the lesson himself and he was very interesting. When we went to the SOS, he gave the lesson to 104 kids, not just 20 kids. And you were all sitting, hearing him, wonderful. And when we sat with the youth, he took initiative to interrupt the discussion and tell them about how God loves the orphanage kids. Right? So he was a wonderful example of one that took how he developed himself through the course, because the course was more of the soft skills part. So he took the part of creativity, interaction, taking initiative. The last thing, the team spirit. The team spirit was wonderful, right? Like Shahira said, the main thing was to have the same Holy Spirit, which came that Abuna he suggested if we would pray with him on each night. So each night at 12 o'clock exactly at night, we would go with Abuna in the church, pray for half an hour to thank him for this day and ask for his help in the second day. And that's what exactly helped us in everything, because even the Himba that didn't understand what is God, they asked for baptism. And the kids that never heard about God, they wanted to come to church and so on. The big question here in a minute says, what's next? That's the main issue. We enjoyed it very much. God made miracles in front of us. We were very happy. But what's next? So we are trying through the course and what we are hearing here to put some plans for the future. All right? What we call the dream everywhere. All right? So the first thing was to make a very precise and elaborate evaluation and report for the trip in details. Every part we went in details, and we each place we went, we had a description of it, the people we have, the servants we have, and the contact persons in that place. We have our experience there. Everybody wrote his experience in that country, so whenever anybody's leaving there, he can read and know. All right, our observations about the place, the opportunities, and the recommendations for each area. That's for each area. And then we are thinking about the future. What can we do in the coming maybe 10 years? Dr. Magdi said the first question is, when do we leave? We don't know when do we leave. We don't know yet. But we know at least if we're talking about 10 years. So the first year is a discovery thing. What we went is the discovery trip for the discovery year. All right? And what we are working on is to start splitting the first team that out of 8 members to split into 4 teams, each with new 6 people, and have what we call the first generation to Namibia for a whole year that we go for 5 trips. The second year after, we were going to split in more. And here what we think that we can have a preparation course in the Windhoek and not in the north, and then in the year after maybe so and so. So we are trying to plan, and I think with the help of God and the course and what we're taking, we'll be hopefully knowing what we're going to do in Namibia soon. Please pray for Namibia. It needs all our prayers. Thank you.
Okay, I'll try to be as brief as I can, actually. My talk is about... It's not far from what Namibia was talking about, but it's rather the other side of the world. the vision for evangelism, as our dear Abuna Dawood has it, is to cover not only Africa, but also Asia. Okay, so my talk is about Asian religions. Okay, we're talking about Hinduism, Buddhism, and Confucianism. I'd like to start with a little prayer, please. Dear Father, as we look today to learn more about some of the world religions, please guide us and help us to be respectful of what we learn. Use this information as a tool to guide us in sharing the gospel's message. In your precious name, amen. Okay, those three sort of religions are very much intertwined, and this is why they had to come in one presentation. And I'll just go through them very quickly. And maybe some of you, if you're interested to ask any questions later, we can do that. But let us think of them as we go along, as what do we see in them, and what are our chances as Christians, followers of Christ? What are our chances to go in there? Of course, again, as our Namibian group said, it's the Lord who does it, not us. But the Lord told us that we have to know. Okay, Hinduism is the first. It's one of the oldest religions. It's unlike other religions that it has no single founder. It doesn't have one person, and it has no single scripture. A long history, it had had a lot. So it's sort of a way of life rather than a strict religion. Where? It's in so many places all over. And mostly in India, Nepal, Sri Lanka. But believe it or not, it's 950 million followers worldwide. So it's the third largest religion after Christianity and Islam. Some of those statistics are really stunning. I was personally stunned. One other thing I want to say, I'm not the specialist in any of this. I am just a person who got interested, and I'm sharing some of my knowledge. So I'm not a specialist or someone that is a reference or anything. So I claim if any of this is lacking or something, do forgive me. Okay, the belief of Hinduism is lots of gods, lots of goddesses, mainly manifestation in what they call the supreme Brahman. There is some sort of similarity that some people say, okay, they have a trinity as well. But guess what? The trinity is in three gods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Brahma is the first. Is responsible for creation, supposedly. Vishnu is the preserver of the universe, while the third, Shiva, has the role of destroying it in order to recreate. However, Brahma is the least worshipped now, and there aren't many temples devoted to it. Some sort of similarity that they say, okay, in Hinduism there is incarnation. Vishnu's incarnation. But guess what? Vishnu has been incarnated 9 times so far. And the expectation is that, okay, the incarnation was in the form of a fish, of a pig, of a creature, half man and half lion, a dwarf, a hunter, and eventually it is expected that the Vishnu is going to come a last time. Worshipping, they worship at home. The worshippers repeat the names of their favorite gods and goddesses. Water, fruit, flowers, and incense are offered to gods. The majority of the Hindu homes have a shrine where they offer. It's anything like a room or a small altar, or simply pictures or statues of gods. And family members usually worship together. Now, pilgrimage is a very important part of Hinduism. And it is some sort of trying to see God or the gods. Popular pilgrimage places are rivers, but also temples, mountains, and other sacred sites. The purpose of life for the Hindus is to realize that we are part of a whole, a totality, some sort of a god or gods. But this can be realized only by going through a cycle of rebirth, birth, life, death, and rebirth. The result of sin for them is a cycle of rebirths. Bad acts and thoughts will cause one to be born at a lower level, as a person or even an animal. Salvation, this sort of wheel is like, this is the cycle that we are always stuck in. But it's not like, so it's one human being can be reborn again. If he does something good, if his life eventually is good, then he is born into a higher place. So if he was a fish, he may be a pig. If he's a pig, he may be a half creature. Being a man is lucky. Salvation is worked out by each individual through successive lives. It's a continuous struggle to reach the utmost goal, which is the nirvana. Hindus recognize three possible ways for salvation, mostly through yoga, but different kinds of yoga. It's very interesting. Liberation is reached, may be reached by, first, works of people. And usually it is by abiding by familial and social duties. Another way is knowledge. Knowledge is very important for Hindus. And the basic idea of the way of knowledge is that the cause of our bondage to this cycle is ignorance. So we have to get out of this through knowledge. Our ignorance consists of different wrong things. Okay. Salvation is achieved through attaining a state of consciousness in which we realize our identity with that God or with the gods. Usually, meditation helps one reach that. Another way of salvation is devotion. This way, most favored, is it also satisfies the human longing for some kind of emotional or personal approach to religion. It involves some sort of what is called self-surrender to one of the many personal gods or goddesses in worship. And also this is another kind of yoga. Okay, perhaps the most famous Hindu in recent history was Gandhi. There is no god higher than truth, Mahatma Gandhi said. No god higher than truth. Using Hindu principles, of course, you know that he was trying to counteract the colonization. Okay. Hinduism and Christianity. Now, many people left Hinduism for a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. These people left a life of hopelessness, where they were dependent on their own works to escape from this cycle, to a life of hope and assurance of their salvation. They left those millions of gods and found the one true God of the universe who cares intimately for each one of them. Buddhism. Okay, I'll try to go very quickly through that. I'm not going to go through each and every slide. But if you look at the Buddha, The founder, of course, is Gautama, who was not called Buddha. He lived somewhere between 560 and 490 BC, and he is claimed to have reached what is called enlightenment in the Buddhism, and therefore assumed this title of the Buddha. So his name was not Buddha. He had another name, and this name, he assumed it out of reaching that sort of enlightenment that Buddhists look for. It's interesting that Buddha was a contemporary of Confucius, which is the third largest in Southeast Asia. 360 million Buddhists all over. And the interesting thing about Buddhism, in Buddhism there is no creator, no God, no creator to explain the origin of the universe. How was it? How did it happen? It's a series of present events that were caused by past events that became future events and so on. There is no God. Gods are just, for them, a concept of culture. Alhum shadawa bil haqiqa. Nothing real. The teachings, Buddha said, I teach suffering, its origin, its cessation, and the path. That's all I teach. Buddha believes that life is a series of suffering. It's only suffering. What he's trying to teach us is how to get out of this series of suffering. Life exists in itself with no real meaning attached to it. There are four noble truths for Buddhism. Ordinary life brings about suffering. Origin of suffering is some sort of attachment to anything. Cessation of suffering can be achieved. And there is an eight-way path to achieve this. It's very similar to Hinduism. It comes out of Hinduism. However, it is different in the way that there is no belief in real gods or any gods. The Buddha is often compared to a physician. Those noble truths, he diagnosed the problem, and the third truth is the realization that there is a cure. The fourth truth is those eight paths. Okay, causes of suffering for him is different greed, different wrong things that you do. The outcome of sin is again birth and rebirth, the same idea of Hinduism. But, again, what he wanted to reach is some sort of nirvana as well. But nirvana for him is not like Hinduism, that you attach to some sort of God. No. It is something that has no end, that has no meaning. And Buddha says, don't ask questions. This is it. Asking questions is like arguing with your doctor who is trying to save your life. I'm showing you the way out. I'm not telling you what will happen after that. Once you reach that nirvana, good for you. But don't ask what will happen. You will experience it. But what is going to happen? I cannot give you the answer. And don't ask questions. Of course, meditation for Buddhists is very important. Everything is based by the mind. It's very interesting that the belief in the mind is very important. That once you control your mind, everything else is okay. The five guides that lead to good is not to lie, not to steal, not to kill, not to hurt anybody via sexual relations, and not to be angry. It's interesting saying that says, holding on to anger is like grasping a hot coal in your hand with the intent of throwing it at someone. But the problem is that you are getting burnt. I found this really inspiring. Confucianism has Confucius, as its founder. Of course, I'm trying to go very quickly through it, and the presentation will be there on site, so you can get your details from there if you wish. Confucius was contemporary of Buddha, which is interesting. Confucianism is a controversy. There's a controversy about how many people are Confucianists. Some say they're just 6 million, and some say they are 300 million. The discrepancy is very interesting because the reason why is that because some Confucianists adopt other beliefs as well. So some can be a Confucianist and a Buddhist, Confucianist and a Hindu. A Confucianist, believe it or not, and a Christian. A Confucianist and a Muslim. So they can adopt other religion, other sort of beliefs. So in a way, Confucianism is just a way of life that has been adopted by the government of China basically as a system of state as well. Details of this kind of attitude or philosophy is also going to be available for you on the site. But what I want you to know is that these people have been craving, because of their culture. As you can see, this culture is full of picturesque, it's very picturesque, it's very mythological. It has a lot of legends and myths because it is the product of the culture that they exist in. But inside each and every one who is looking for those beliefs is the pursuit of truth. They are looking for truth. I could see this very clearly when our Namibian group were speaking about the group that believed in that God and how much they just grasped the idea from them and said, okay, it's Jesus. These people are ready for us because they are ready for truth. And interestingly, they have all the ethical background. Ethics are all there. As a matter of fact, believe it or not, and I hope I'm not blamed for what I'm saying, but we can learn a lot of ethics from them because they are very strictly ethical. However, they are looking for the truth, the challenge. There is a Buddhist nun who was once Christian, and she transferred to Buddhism. She said that what really made all the difference in her first exposure to Buddhism was the practicing Buddhists she came across. She writes, I saw that they were relaxed and happy. Perhaps that was the most remarkable. That is her words. And indeed, slightly puzzling thing about them, that these people she saw were relaxed and they were happy. So she asks, so why did I need to look elsewhere for guidance? Was it simply that Jesus himself was in some way lacking as a spiritual model? Was it dissatisfaction with the church? Or was it simply that another way presented itself that more adequately fulfilled my need at that time when I was exposed to Buddhism? Well, the Dalai Lama said, everyone wants to be happy. No one wants to suffer. Jesus and the Buddha are extraordinary friends and teachers. This is the words of the Dalai Lama. They can show us the way, but we can't rely on them to make us happy or to take away our suffering. Those are the words of the Dalai Lama. That is up to us. Now, here is the big difference. Jesus does not show the way. He is the way. It is only through him that we can find true joy, even in times of utter suffering, and eternal happiness, even after death. That is the key we have. Whether it's the Buddha, whether it's Confucius, whether it's the Dalai Lama, whether it's Buddha, whether it's Gandhi, they taught about the truths as far as they could strive hard to reach them. But our Lord Jesus is God incarnated. He was, He is, and will always be. Our Lord Jesus taught the truth, not about it, because He is the truth, the way, and the life. Let us remember this verse, but in your hearts, rever Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. This is the main issue. When I personally need to tell you that as I went through this trip to Asia, going through all those wonderful ways of life, I could see how precious our Christianity is. I could see how true our Christianity is, not mythological. Jesus Christ, our Lord, was born, lived, died, and was resurrected. We have truth, so we have very strong grounds. Those are the strong grounds that when people like Namibians are hurled at, they get it. But we need to be prepared very well to know, because knowledge is going to help us a lot. But of course, it's not going to be us. It's always going to be God. Thank you.